finally brought you here. Behold, Forge the Narrative.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. We are the Bellow Souls Podcast, joined by Red Powell.
What's up?
Tanya Gates and Adam Camilleri.
Hey, everybody.
Oh, good, eh?
What a year. Look, I apologize for actually not having shows out for the last week and a half, 2 weeks or so, because had a hardware problem with this machine that I'm now recording on. And it got dicey there for a while, but I think everything is back to normal. Hopefully so. I say hopefully so, crossing our fingers. If you hear this, know that everything is fine. No, but this is inadvertently our year, like, in review show. Like, we're getting ready. This is the not a lot of Warhammer events happening right now. There's been some releases, but it's of, like, made-to-order stuff and some, I think there's actually, like, a cool, like, there was a boxing.
Really? Was it a small, you know, unheard of something or other, maybe the third of a thing? I don't know.
I'm not introducing this very well, but I just know there's been, like, we're kind of the calm before the storm. We know that it's going to be busy sometime soon. We've seen some previews from a bunch of Eldari stuff and a bunch of Astra Militarum stuff. And
you were going a totally different direction. I was talking about Fulgrim.
Oh. Oh, no. There's a boxing day miniature that's out in stores right now that you can, if you were like, want to get that commemorative stuff. But yes, on Christmas Day, we saw the preview for Fulgrim. Like, the fourth of the... Is it... Oh, can you call
it fourth?
The primary...
I thought it was third.
The Legion?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, it's the third Legion.
No, I meant the fourth Primarch of the Chaos.
Yeah, the fourth Demon Primarch that has dropped.
Okay,
there you go.
Okay. Is it
the third Legion,
correct,
Paul?
We are both correct.
He is the third Legion. You are both correct.
Well, we got there. We got there.
I was gonna turn my head backwards and, well, actually, you, Paul.
Actually. Yep. Oh, but no, that's a... yes, but I was talking about the miniature. People can go here if they want to, which is, I think it's a... I can't remember if it's Sigmar. Well, it's out there. This is a boxing miniature. Check your stores. But yeah, Fulgrim, like, wow.
Wow, indeed. What do we think? And of course, there's the internet cannot resist comparing to the 30K,
yep.
So the Horus Heresy version. I'm not going to say my opinion just yet, but I love the model. I think it's fantastic.
Let me preface this with the fact, I think it's an amazing model. But with...
Incredible.
This is a model, or an idea that people have had in their heads forever. Let's throw it back to Angron.
Who was
when
it, what,
you
was
first
about
saw
this,
Angron?
Was it about this time 2 years ago we got Angron?
Well, I can't remember the time period. But when you saw Angron, I know people had feelings about Angron, and like because of his he's got that kind of, I want to say, orcish face. Now, these are some of the things people said. A different pose than maybe they were considering. And now I can't imagine Angron
said that.
What's that? You don't remember saying that?
Anybody who compared Angron to an orc, I'm going to find him.
Is that why him and Gaz have so much beef?
Put
Gaz
it in the
looks
comments.
At him as like,
if you think Angron looks like an orc, you put it in the comments.
I'll
come find you.
Personally.
Well, the first thing I want to say about the Fulgrim model is, wow, that paint job. Just...
Yeah.
That's the first thing I thought. I think, holy moly, who did they give that to for that paint job? That is gorgeous. And the thing that I keep looking at is the texture and like the wrinkles on the snake form.
Well, the wounds. Like there's open wounds,
yeah.
Like flayed wounds
yeah.
and things like that on this model.
Incredible. I will be watching and rewatching the first tutorials that come out on how to paint this just because I think it's just going to be a work of art watching it come together.
The faces, I know there's been some consternation around the heads of those things, but I was instantly smoothed out. I'm like, look, don't worry. The faces that I paint never look like the example faces, even on the same model.
I do like that they gave the helmet. They were like, if you just don't like any of these three helmets, just helmet, you know?
I saw one of those. It was a good meme. One of those where it was like, you know, it showed the faces and then it was like, you know, it's the kid, the cartoon kid who like puts the mask over the face. He like put the helmet on. And he's like, there, that's better.
I saw one that was Deadpool in the first one where he takes his mask off and he's got Hugh Jackman cutout on it.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's good.
It was just someone trying to pick their Fulgrim face. It's fair. I do love that this is now a theme. This seems to be a theme because they did this with the lion, where we had what, three heads on the lion. We had the big old beautiful helmet, the hood with the helmet, and then the Tywin son of Tytos Lannister head. And all, I would like to say, lion, three heads, all good. Fulgrim, four heads. up to you. Let you decide at home.
I'm digging it. And then the options too. Like you run in there, you could have, you say there's four different players, Slaanesh players there, four different options. It's amazing.
That is cool.
Yeah.
That is
cool. I'm just going to say that I think that I'm ruined by Age of Sigmar models. Because I just looked at it and I was like, this model is really beautiful, but it doesn't have Marathi's wings. It needs Marathi's wings.
So that's, you know, I was hoping someone was going to, I know we weren't probably going to go in the most, you can't just choose one, but I was hoping someone was going to say, like, which is your favorite Fulgrim? And I was going to say Marathi.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was hard not to instantly think about Fulgrim when you saw the Marathi model get there. But what I was saying about Angron, though, is that you have this vision about the youth. If you like this legion, you've probably thought about this character. If you read the Horus Heresy model or books and read all the way through the Siege of Terror, you've thought about this character a lot. So it's like super difficult to nail exactly what's in your mind. But I think the designers are getting closer and closer with every release of doing that. Like we're technology is caught up to imagination. And this is like a shining example of that.
And I find Fulgrim to be an extremely fascinating character. I think he's one of the characters that has pretty much like, you know, you have some characters that have one or two like absolute peaks in storytelling throughout the narrative of the Horus Heresy. And Fulgrim has like five distinct change the galaxy decisions that occurred in his timeline. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. What are those five, Adam?
How many spoilers do we want?
No.
Well, one of them. Yeah, a couple of them are super old.
I guess you're rescued from that one. But I don't think there's five.
It might not be five, but I said like five. But the first one is the big question. Would what happened to Fulgrim have happened anyway? Was Fulgrim always destined to have the destiny that he had, seeing as his story was a part? His corruption and his exposure to chaos came apart from. Wasn't via Erebus, wasn't via an anathema on Davin. It was his own story, his own little self-contained microcosm between his own interactions with chaos. I find that a fascinating little side tangent to the whole story.
Didn't he run into Eldrad at one point?
It did, yeah.
And Eldrad was like,
"Yeah,
we got to get out of here."
Without giving too much away, they just had I think Warhammer Plus had a lore piece on it or something talking about Eldrad and this little engagement between them.
Oh, nice.
Something like that. But I just recently saw something where it was talking about that, where it was Eldrad foresaw the Horus Heresy coming and he goes to talk to Fulgrim. Yeah. And needless to say, it doesn't go well. And Eldrad sees the sword of Lair. That kind of throws the whole thing. And Eldred's like, nope, never mind. Sorry. You're not the people I was looking to talk to. Let me go find someone else. I'll be on my way. And Fulgrim's like, no, wait, come back.
But there's a battle. See, the avatar of Cain is one of those creatures or entities that they throw that for a while. I think it happened a couple times in the.
So many times. In the as the measuring season. Stick.
It's like, can this person beat down the Avatar Kane, like a god of war, yes or no?
Tick. Yeah. It's like, all right, so we need to demonstrate how badass this person is. Chuck in the Avatar. This battered old Avatar's been through like four or five different Primarch beatings. It's like, oh geez, on its walking frame.
So I think to your position that you offer, Adam, with would he have fallen anyways? I think the more recent books, and again without spoiling anything, the Fabius Bile books that have just come out. I highly recommend reading those if you haven't had a chance, because you get to see some more into things that might explain that question / answer in its own way.
Well, and the other huge pivotal story changing moment, which was of course the one that is not a spoiler, and the fact that Fulgrim cut off Ferris Manus's head, which turned the heresy completely in a different axis. And then Fulgrim having to deal with the fact that the only reason that Horus wanted him on side was so he could bring Ferris on side, because Horus actually wanted Ferris so much more than he wanted Fulgrim as part of his, yeah. And even dealing with that dejection from Horus, because there's so many lines in the stuff saying, I would trade you five times over to get Ferris in here. And the Fulgrim's just like, mwah.
Did Ferris make a sword for Fulgrim?
Correct.
Did.
And is and that Fulgrim on this
made the hammer?
It is. Yeah. The Firebrand.
Yeah.
He has three weapons. And then the fourth one, I believe, is just a talon. Which is an interesting transition. So, like, what I like to think, again, is, like, we've now seen Horus Ascendant. We've seen the Demon Primarch Fulgrim from 30K. And now we've seen 40K. And admittedly, you know, Paul, you're talking about, like, this image in your head. And I think the last time I saw Fulgrim in the lore as the Demon Primarch that I can remember was the Gathering Storm. Now, there may have been some other parts since then, but I haven't.
That's
I feel
in
like
the
it's
Siege
not
Terror.
Standing
like,
out.
He's there.
No. Gathering Storm, like when Gilliman comes back.
Oh,
to
yeah, okay, yeah. Okay, that one, yeah.
He's released. And he actually, excuse me, he encounters Fulgrim, and he gets in, like he's they throw down again. And I admit, when we talk about the 40K Demon Primarch Fulgrim, I don't know where, I don't know if it was a piece of artwork or something like that, but I have it in my head that he was like his skin was purple, like dark purple, you know, like Angron's, like this dark red kind of deal.
We have seen little artworks here and there over the years of like
quite
the
possibly.
Face and and torso of Fulgrim where he is just literally purple.
And I think that's probably it, you know. And I just had this in my head that he'd gone from like wearing 30K, because like when I saw it, right, and I think everyone, the rumor machine, the deal that Warhammer community does, we all, like, it ended up being Marathi, and everybody, like, was let down for a moment before they realized how awesome and amazing that model is. Yes, Adam, you have a question?
Third plot point, almost decapitating Gilliman, requiring him to be ensconced, and then being able to be brought back in the 41st millennium.
That's true. Yeah. No, I mean,
that's three. Yep. We'll see what I can dig up without major spoilers. I'm trying to dip and dodge the spoilers here.
The Siege of Terror one, I'll give you. I don't think it would have changed anything, but his decision in the end of the three books or whatever, like what he does. We all know he doesn't win, right? Like clearly, like Horus loses to the Emperor and the Emperor goes on the throne kind of deal. Like everybody knows that, but like it's not like, you know, it's not like Sanguinius could have done anything else. Like Fulgrim was headed to the wall and he was not going to, right. But the decision he made, you're kind of like, well, what if he had,
what if his pride had not gotten him at that moment? What would have happened?
Right. Yeah. Looking forward to that one, Tanya. Just wait.
I'm still stuck on Horus Heresy. I can't find like four books to continue on. So I might have to just move on without those.
You
ones,
can,
but, Betrayer is one of them, and I'm like very
That's
sad about it.
One.
Don't miss that one.
Yeah. I can't find it.
Don't miss that one. Anyway, looking forward to Fulgrim, and of course, what it heralds with that army. And I know there are a lot of dedicated players out there for that faction. So hopefully they're as excited for it as hopefully I think they should be.
I mean, if there's an opportunity to run all four Demon Primarchs at once,
yeah.
I mean, like, it's going to happen. You're going to see it.
Hope that, talk about a real Bash Brothers list.
I know.
Like that'd be
and they'd have to be. I could get so juiced like just thinking about the rules that they would have. Like they can't come within each other's aura ranges, or else just awful stuff happens.
Two of them can, but the other two can't. So
that's well, like, depends which two.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like they have you know depends somewhat.
That one's going to stay from that one. That one's going to stay from that one. But if those two are near each other, things are all right. Not too bad. Anytime three of them get together, everyone dies. All four in the same place, the game's over. Everyone loses. It's 0-0. It's over.
Speaking a little bit about the year in review, though, this has been an awesome year for Warhammer. The competitive scene is probably the best, if not the close, the best it's ever been. You know, there is a thriving, like, meta, like a real meta, to where you can take multiple different things and be successful. There's not just one way to build a you know, most factions nowadays. It's been good on that front.
Yeah, we've hit a pinnacle of balance that has been extremely rare. And the beautiful thing about that balance is it looks like it's maintainable. For the very first time in 40K's history, I'd say it looks like the level of balance that we've managed to reach in probably at least the last 9 months, 6 to 9 months of the game, these very calm waters where we're in, looks like it is a sustainable thing. We could have the next, 18 months of the game being the similar stage of balance, where anybody on any day with any gen, with the right generalship, right run, right list can go the distance. We saw it happen at World Championships, where Custodes came out of absolutely nowhere and beat some of the best players in the world playing the best factions in the world. And so yeah, it's a generals meta, and it's really exciting. We do have some new stuff coming, but it's been shown, even when Sisters came in with their codex and they were straight to the top of the game, 3 months, 4 months later, they're relatively balanced. They're in a great place.
A brewer's paradise, I think, out there right now, too, being able to just pick different things and plan up, kind of play your play style with the emphasis on generalship. And I'll even break that down of like scoring points in the missions, like being able to effectively interact with the missions. And if you build a list that can effectively interact with the known missions that are the same for everybody, you can do pretty well out there. Dice, aside.
Yeah.
So that's nice. Some amazing models out this year. I was just going to look at the models for the release in 2024.
Literally just pulled that up on Warhammer Community. What, did you guys vote?
Yes.
I missed the voting this year, unfortunately. I went to do it today and it was already closed. So
what would you voted for, Tanya?
What would I have voted for? Rattlings. I mean, I guess they're not out yet. Will they be out by the end?
I think they're on.
They're on there, yeah, for the November. They were the November one. Yeah. Oh, it was the Dire Arm one, the little feast one, not the actual box, the guilt box.
Well then, I don't know what I would have voted for.
That still count. I mean, there are rattlings. That can still count.
Yeah.
Sure.
What's the Mortark of Delusions name?
Oh my goodness, if you hadn't asked me.
Commander Fury.
Guy.
No, I voted for him.
That's who I voted for.
I think that's dead on, the best model that has come out.
Yeah, well, it was incredible.
Or the Horse Heresy, Blood Angel, Upgrade Pack.
Was that one of the options?
I don't know what the community said, but I think it did come out in 2024.
Usheron.
Yeah.
Usheron.
Pound for pound, you can put a lot of Sigmar models up against 40K stuff.
I'm surprised anything other than Sigmar has won any for the last 10 years. The Sigmar models, just every year they come out, and I think it's only like the bias of possibly having maybe 20% more people play 40K than Sigmar that keeps Sigmar from like 1, 2, 3 every year. But yeah, I try to put away my bias and just like what was just the best looking mini that came out. When did my jaw drop the most this year? Because there's been a couple. Genuinely, there's been quite a few this year. Yeah. The new Vermin Lord character for Skaven. Mm-hmm. That's the one listed as in September. That was the other time when I was just like, oh, wow, incredible. And what a little funny thing that they did where they're like, we know we're going to show you Fulgrim, but we're going to do this before Fulgrim. We're going to make you vote before Fulgrim.
Hey, look, there's a lot of stuff coming. Cannot wait. See, we saw all those Phoenix Lords and stuff on the previews. That just means, and that's got to be soon, right? Since we've seen the previews, really looking forward to it. But that's like the tip of the iceberg, probably what 2025 is going to hold. See what else this year. Done a lot of talking about Warhammer. Still really enjoy doing that.
how many events did you shoutcast last year? Well, this year.
So
I think I did seven,
eight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. More than a few.
Yeah. Still loving that. Got an opportunity to revamp the Blood Angels. Like basically have a whole Primaris force just about. I actually put some work on. I plan to have these last five Death Company completed by the end.
I saw that photo on Instagram. Your progress, starting out strong with the red crosshairs and everything.
Yeah, thank you.
Do you think they took too long, like getting the Firstborns out of there? Because I mean, it was the start of 8th edition when Primaris came into the game, and now we're into the second year of 10th edition, and Firstborns are still getting heavily played. The Predator has like never been better. It's actually kind of interesting. Everyone like that. There was a lot of doom and gloom when Primaris came out, and we're like, oh, they're going to invalidate this, that, the other, and we're like 5, 6 years. Since that inception, and there's still plenty of Firstborns playable.
So, and I think that's great. I was just looking at that too.
As someone who has, I don't know, 50 Death Company Marines, like the last thing that I quote unquote need is more Death Company. But I did it specifically for the aesthetic choice of like I just like the way it looks with the rest of the forces. Like I've been playing
is good.
Yeah, some Assault Intercessors, obviously because they're cool, got great rules, and that uniform look across the army, I appreciated it. And then, of course, the Death Company did go through a change.
Yeah, and I'm not going to sit here and say there hasn't been pain. I have a dresser I have just like a stack of drawers, and each drawer has like an army in, and each I've got a drawer for each wing of my Dark Angels army, and the Ravenwing drawer, legended, just gone. 9 attack bikes, like 15 regular bikes, scout bikes, 7 land speeders, including a couple of land speeder storms and stuff like that, gone, legended. And yes, that sucked for a little bit, but it gave me the opportunity. Now I've got like 9 Outriders, which are holy moly, so damn good. 20 Black Knights, Storm Speeders. Sorry, what are they? Land Speeder Storms. Sorry. Yeah, Land Speeder Storms and Storm Speeders. They love doing this to us.
I mean, Storm Speeders different, yeah.
Speed Landstorm will be the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, but Paul, have you got a chance to read the new Dark Angel book or Blood Angel book, the Darkness and the Blood?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I love that.
That was a good one. I mean, it's just the transition, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's where the Primaris are kind of finding their place in the Blood Angels and everything. It's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, things like if it was it too long, you can still, the Firstborn still exist. You know, it's one of those to where, like, and I think the people with the game is doing a great job of kind of paying respect to most collections, I think, as far as like getting to use some of that stuff. But it is rough when you totally lose access to a model, for sure.
It is. That is just part of the game. And look, I had a lot of fun with all those models.
I mean,
and all those models,
I got a lot. I mean, again, yeah. I'm not immune to this as well. I'm not commenting on other people's stuff. I'm talking commenting on mine as well.
I got a lot of blocky little blocks, little metal blocks.
Boxy boys. But yeah, it's just a tale. It's just a story of the game. And the fact is, like those miniatures, I got like 10 years of joy out of them before they got legended. That's fine. Like that's fine. Like. Are you sad because, you know, the movie you wanted to see at the movies that you've seen 4 times isn't at the movies anymore? Isn't it the cinema? No. You've got your joy. You know, it's okay.
On the other side of it, though, just to play slightly devil's advocate, is like when you invest time and love into that, you know, and then there are some people that got those models the day before that happened. You know, there's some of that exists. Exactly. But at the same time, progress will be progressing and, like, it's fine.
Straight up, I have purchased 3 Sarastas Chassis Knights for my Knights army, and new Codex is coming. I don't know if the Forge World Knights are gonna make it, but I'm doing them anyway because they're gorgeous models, and I'm not gonna regret owning them. God, it's just more so like
when you've got the little knights, and then the medium knights, and the big knights, and the bigger knights, and then
I like. It's only until I started building it. I've seen those knights on the table. I've played against them 100 times, but only until I started building them, I was like, this guy's hip is taller than a Sarastas. The Sarastas' hip is taller than the Questorus' head. It's wild. Yeah, really cool.
But yeah, as far as like Primaris versus the Firstborn, I really did it specifically because I like the way they look better. And I say specifically, like, with that many Death Company bodies, it would not have been the first time that I just switched arms around and, like, just called it a day. Like, the arms of the Bits arms are basically the same scale on the Primaris versus the Firstborn anyway. But I wanted to have these profiles in the army versus everything else. Like, give me a Primaris Vindicator. Yeah, I had to get a Vindicator reference read.
And I didn't even have to bring it up. I didn't even have to say it. You've been accepted. I know that feels like it was your choice, Paul, but
I do actually have one in my list right now.
Of course you do.
It absorbs a lot of firepower and occasionally gets a shot off that might do something. So.
It's real tank. That's exactly what that is. Everything you just said fits in the tank column.
But I do plan, and once I have that, these, and I've already, my list only has 5 Death Company in now, but I'm painting another 5 because, you know, a lot of success out there happening with Astaroth that I've, or at least the idea of it, and, you know, Death Company at scale are better than Death Company in the micro.
The idea of Astaroth, the concept of this, of the Sanguinor,
yeah.
A vision of Dante, talks about his
this is how Blood Angel like players artist, exist.
Like a poet.
That's what goes on in our heads. But so anyway, the army's done, but I want to get these last 5 done, and that'll be that. I'll cap off my year, and I've basically got to repaint just about 2,000 points of Blood Angels between.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, so I shouldn't say that, not completely. Like, I had some Blade Guard and I added to it, you know, finished off a Repulsor, Impulsor that was hanging around, and then Sanguinary Guard, which are beautiful. Those are actually probably models of the basically that whole box set. or the two box sets for Bullet Angels are the like the models of the year for me.
So this is why Paul shouldn't be allowed to vote.
That's right.
I'm just gonna say it out there, because it doesn't matter what other models came out, doesn't matter how good they were. It's like, oh my god, oh, it's got a blood drop on it. Bang! Yeah. Hit the red button.
How many times can I vote? How many accounts do I have to make? Oh well. So anyway, it's been a good year. How about y'all? How do y'all feel about your Warhammer journey this year?
Ooh, I feel like my journey had a lot of like highs and lows for sure. In terms of my personal growth, I feel like I had a lot of like mentality growth at the end of the year this year, which makes me really hopeful for what I can accomplish next year in terms of like events and like tournaments and things like that. But the year started off kind of rough for me, not gonna lie. So but yeah, I did not paint very much, so one of my goals for next year is to definitely paint more, because your girl has kind of been slacking.
I want to paint less, but paint more joyously, if that makes sense. I broke myself this year painting, because I went back to playing guard after Marines. I actively mained guard again for the first time in a while, and then I had to paint a bunch of new models with the same scheme that I'd killed myself painting 15,000 points of for like the 8 years previously. And going back to that, and then having to pressure paint, you know, for events, broke me. It broke a lot of my joy of the game. And now I feel like I'm hungover being asked to have another tequila. And I'm like, oh, no.
There's a bit interesting to when you've painted an army a long time ago, and then you go back and you want to match that color scheme. You're probably a better painter now than you were then. Yeah.
Well, it was more the quantity. It was more the quantity of what I had to paint. So 30 Cassican, done. 45 Tempestus Scions, done. Bunch of new tanks, like 3 Rogal Dawns, Sentinels are done, and then a bunch of other stuff. And I was just like, I am cooked. I am so cooked on painting this scheme I've been painting for 10 years, that I actually am going to go and do a new army. I'm just going to go do a whole new army, because this is like harming my enjoyment of the game.
Nope.
And so,
perfect.
Yeah.
You figured it out.
Yeah. And had to make a mature choice, because I've only ever played competitively Dark Angels or Astra Militarum since 7th edition, you know? Was 7th edition a 3-year edition? Was it a 4-year edition? I know 6th edition was like a 2-year edition.
Like 3 weeks.
Yeah, 6th edition was literally 3 weeks. But I can't remember how long 7th was. I know 8th, 9th, and now 10th is expected to be 3 years each, and that seems to be their rotation, 3-year blocks per edition. But yeah, so... If it was a four-year edition, then I've done 12 years of just those two factions, which is wild. And then Paul's just like, dude, I've got 2 decades of Blood Angels. What are you talking about?
Two.
Just stretching out over here. Oh, shit.
Try 3, newbie.
yeah.
Red, what about you?
I was thinking, I started this year having my world eaters kind of at least at a comfortable point for where I had them, because I'd just taken them to the grand narrative a month before the new year started. And then this year I was trying to figure out where I was going to go with, I started this year thinking I was going to try Custodes. And I want to do this kind of, I have them. I started to build them and assemble them and get them ready. And I wanted to do this kind of white and gold. I wanted to do more of a white scheme for them versus just like straight gold.
It looks good. If you're playing that, I forget what the name of the sub-faction is.
There is
a white one. White and gold.
Right, yeah. And so that, with either red or black, cloth. And so I was really excited to do that. And then I really got caught up with work around March or so, and so I didn't get that far. And then, of course, I was out doing my work, business, training, whatever you want to categorize it as, and I was gone for 2.5 months, and then I had to move, and so there was kind of a stall where I just spent a lot of time thinking about what I was going to do. And by the time I really got back and got settled into my new duty station and all sorts of stuff, Imperial Agents had dropped, and so you know, I'd been collecting Imperial Agent like stuff with Kill Team. I had RBD squads, and then the Inquisitorial Agents dropped before even Imperial Agents were a thing. And so I was kind of picking up all these little things here and there. And then when the Imperial Agents Codex came around, right as I got settled back into my new place, I was like, oh, well, that's the direction I wanted to go. And then, of course, there was the grand narrative and the cosplay thing and everything. And so, like, this last half of I feel like I did a whole year's worth of effort in starting and from July till now. And now I'm working on some Night Lord stuff for 30K, which I'm pretty excited about. And I'm having fun with that. And I'm actually using, you know, we're talking about scaling and aesthetics and everything. And, you know, there's this funny meme about how, like, you know, Emperor's Children from 30K to the Fall and Horus Heresy to 40K, like how drastic they changed. And then there's this like funny joke about how like the Night Lords look exactly the same every phase of the way.
Yep.
And so I admittedly, I have a ton of 30K stuff. I have an Iron Warriors army and whatnot. And so just had to get some bits and whatnot for go Night Lords. But what I ended up doing and what I'm working on right now is I'm using mostly 40K stuff because it's so twisted and looks good in so many ways. And it's kind of got that deal built into it. So I'm pretty excited for that. That's kind of how I'm ending the year, is kind of pushing into my next year. I have I have a Death Company theme that I want to do, kind of like the entire thing. I've got to figure out how to make it work, because certain things, I don't want them to be, you know, actual Death Company play, but I've got to figure out how I want the whole thing to work, because the Death Company models, as you know, Paul, you know the rules, they do a very specific thing, and I want to be able to play with the other stuff too without it all just being this massive Death Company. And, you know, you don't want to be confusing. I don't want it to be like, well, you know, yes, they're all black, but these
because there are Death Company equivalents of the Assault Squad and
correct and right and so I'll have to do that in a very artistic or unique approach so that it makes that distinction. And so I'll figure that out. But that's after I do the Night Lords, I think I want to try something like that. Like I want to make like a Death Company Dante. I don't know. We'll see. But that's kind of what I'm looking at in the new year from where I've come from. So
your Astaroth's a pretty cool looking model. It has an axe.
He has an axe. Yeah. It'd be really fun. So. Think of a Death Company Sanguinar. That sounds pretty fun, too.
Nice. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back, talk more about this. We round out this year. See you in a minute.
Stuff, too, without it all just being this massive Death Company. And, you know, you don't want to be confusing. I don't want it to be like, well, you know, yes, they're all black, but these
because there are Death Company equivalents of the Assault Squad. And
correct. And right. And so I'll have to do that in a very artistic or unique approach so that it makes that distinction. And so I'll figure that out. But that's after I do the Night Lords, I think I want to try something like that. Like I want to make like a Death Company Dante. I don't know. We'll see. But that's kind of what I'm looking at in the new year from where I've come from. So
your Astaroth's a pretty cool looking model. It has an axe.
He has an axe. Yeah. It'd be really fun. So. Think of a Death Company Sanguinar. That sounds pretty fun, too.
Nice. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back, talk more about this. We round out this year. See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back, everybody. Please check out our sponsors. Consider, you know, maybe checking us out on Patreon, getting a t-shirt or so. I should wear the t-shirts more often because they are awesome. Very comfortable. Adam, do you have a question?
Fourth major Fulgrim plot point.
Oh, comment.
Very likely to have been the first Demon Primarch, the first Primarch to achieve apotheosis. It's a little debated between a couple because you're not quite sure when Angrel certain like actual years, but that book comes after. That
I did
one.
Think Angrel.
So in the reading order, if you read in a chronological order of what Black Library tells you to read it in, first time you will come across a Demon Primarch is Fulgrim.
Oh, you may be right. I'm going off a theory. Memory.
Yeah. And it is debated. It's debated whether it is Angron or Fulgrim.
But like, when exactly does one become a Demon Primarch?
When your body turns into a snake. Benchmark?
In this case.
Okay, so we're talking about like the physical
if you're Angron.
Talking about the physical transformation.
Yes.
Right?
I mean, do you want to know how apotheosis occurs or
like the science behind it?
How
sure.
Does one go about possibly applying
so
to this process?
When a mommy demon and a daddy demon love each other very much. Right? Very much.
My goodness.
I really don't actually. Add them back in the box.
I want to talk about the like the lost episode. We actually, so when I, all that the problems I had with the laptop, it actually occurred while we were recording the a little bit ago. We were actually talking about like the like a couple of years ago we did the anti-holiday gift guide, not the but like things to not buy for your Warhammer friend or whatever, because it's so difficult to buy for someone in this game specifically what they want, especially if they're an established player, because they likely have either set their sights on something in and are getting it for themselves or already have it, or you don't know the vastness of their pile of potential or whatever. So it's like a difficult thing to really stick without asking them directly, like, hey, what can I get you? So, but if you want to do it on the sly, it's a lot harder. And so a couple of years ago, we did know things like to not get, you know, like, or whatever, but this time we're actually going to talk about things to get folks, like things that are like basically always kind of like a good, and we lost that. It's too late now, but I did want to share some of the things, at least one of the things, a wet palette. A wet palette is something that I was a holdout for years and did not use. And if they're not using one now and you got it for them, it would be a thoughtful gift. And it has a real low barrier to getting to learn how to use. So that was the idea that I had.
I like it. Something else that I really like is the idea of giving experiences. So if you know somebody who really likes to paint, maybe something fun would be to get them like a one-on-one tutorial with a really good painter that they like. You know, I'm sure that a lot of commission painters or people who have Patreons or whatever, I'm sure that that is something that they would do. I mean, as somebody who has a number of really amazing painters just in my local area as well, I'm sure a lot of them would do that.
That's a cool idea. Mm. Experiences are always like, that's the hot thing now. Like, what is it? What kind of experience can you? And of course, these are not for the past holiday now. These are for like birthdays and the next, maybe the next holiday, make the list for.
My one was dice.
Yeah.
That one, much like the wet palette, is still good.
Yeah, I've never not want to have custom dice. If I have a dice tray right here with, see how many different colors are in this dice tray? So many custom dice in my dice world. And I'm not done yet. I want my coffin to be filled with all my dice.
Like, ooh, that's a great idea.
I'm just lying there like this.
That's a great idea.
Everyone comes past, and instead of throwing dirt, they throw handfuls of custom dice. Just hear that click clack as I'm going into the cold, cold earth. That'll be my jam. Bunch of sixes.
Always a good idea. No one that plays this game ever feels like they have enough dice.
Exactly right. And the beautiful thing is, like, you could, like, if it was, like, if I was going to buy dice for my partner, I would get like a picture of my dog's face on the six or something like that. And there's so many beautiful different organizations out there who will do those things for you. And then all of a sudden, like anytime you roll that dice, you think about that person. And then when you roll the one, you're like, trash dice, crap holiday, nonsense, real relationships. Yeah.
Wow.
I got dark.
Obviously it's their fault when you roll a one.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pictures on the takeaway from this. Is a lot to unpack, but let's just say it's pictures.
You pictures want this, on sixes.
Yeah, the picture on the six.
Mine's, you know, to just quickly make a segue from that. Mine is to, and you know, it's one of those things is like Scrooge, right? Scrooged with Bill Murray. Love that movie.
Watch that. Yeah, a couple days ago.
Right? I mean, he says it. He says, you know, it's never too late. It's never too late, Claire. It doesn't matter. You can still go get these gifts. Well, it doesn't matter that we're recording, you know, well after Christmas now. There were these bundles that they were selling through the Warhammer merchandise stuff that was like faction specific. T-shirt, mug, little book. I thought they were the
Warhammer merch store.
Yeah, Warhammer merch store. Yeah, I think it's a
there,
you can get
there's an affiliate the link page. In the show notes right now.
There you go. Check it out after you nice. Put your comment in there on why you think Angron looks like an orc and I fight you virtually. Then you can click on that link and go buy a cool little gift bundle for your friend, because it's never too late. Bill Murray said it. Never too late. That's me.
You go, Adam.
I played a game on Christmas Day with my partner because we always have the what are the movies you watch at Christmas that aren't necessarily Christmas movies? And of course, Die Hard is one of the ones we always talk about. But Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
It is.
Can't. My one, I always want to do two things. I want to watch a Muppet movie and I want to watch the original Home Alone. They're my two like nostalgic Christmases. They were the movies that were Christmassy when I was young. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, they're just like embedded in my brain. But we got to the question of if you could keep one character the same in a movie and replace everyone else with Muppets, what would be the movie? And
I mean, Star Wars.
Because that's what Treasure Island, you know? It's just Tim Curry.
I mean, if you did that with Force Awakens, it might make sense.
Oh, yes, Paul. Yes. who's staying human? Who's staying human in that movie? And everyone else is Muppets.
So which character? It's clearly Harrison Ford.
I don't know.
He's the only one that should stay human. It would be
not to get us on a tangent. Is that I actually like all the actors and the portrayals of what they do. It's the story that's the silly part. But
was there one? I didn't think there was. I just thought there were scenes that they put together.
But I like where you're going. But I think you could take any of them and as the one human, and it would still be fine. But I think...
Red, what would your movie be? And which character in that movie stays human? Everyone else becomes a Muppet.
Oh, man, there's several, actually, that I would love to. I love... you talk about the Muppet Christmas Carol. Watch that with my kids. I love how hard Michael Caine hits that movie. Like, dude, doesn't let up at all.
He's talked about it. He's documented on the way he approached that, and it's epic.
He had to. He did it so well.
He knocked it out of the freaking park. And the comparisons people are making, people are nostalgic for those movies. The comparison between how Tim Curry acts like a Muppet in a thing of Muppets, and then
Michael Caine is like
it's a Broadway musical play of the utmost importance and integrity. He's just with puppets the whole time.
This is no segue, but a fun fact is, speaking of Treasure Island, not Muppet Treasure Island, but the accents that pirates have, it is thought of that the reason that we talk like a pirate is from the original movie Treasure Island, and that actor just chose to talk that way.
Wow.
I believe it. In that same vein, and just like everyone here is thinking about Vindicators at some point their regular day nowadays, I think probably the funniest Muppet version of anything I can think of right now, and linking to Michael Caine, is Inception.
Ooh.
Think of how funny that would be. And the one person that would need to stay would either be Cillian Murphy, who has to be as serious as he was in the original, or what's the actor?
We've got to head to the internet.
Head to IMDb.
Dun, 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 dun.
Definitely not. Tom Hardy. He's a Muppet. Leonardo DiCaprio, Muppet.
Muppet. 100%.
Elliot Page, Muppet.
Muppet.
What's his name? Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Like, he's already a Muppet, right?
He's already
a Muppet. So we're not even that. You don't even. We're already halfway there with him. What's his name? It's the other CEO.
Red's feelings not necessarily indicative of the first stance of FTN.
Totally me. All personal opinions. Very funny, nonetheless.
Yeah, not mine, however, are 100%. And endorsed. No.
Here's the cast. Here it is. Man. Oh, Ken Watanabe. Yes. He plays Saito. Yes. Yeah. Yes. No, that should be like the perfect one human character, like him or Cillian Murphy, those two, and then everyone else, straight up Muppets. That'd be so funny, man.
What would be yours, Tanya?
Oh, probably Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh man,
that's amazing human choice.
Who's the human? You got so many good options.
That's a great choice.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I kind of want to give it to the big bad evil guy.
I was gonna say.
Yeah.
Because he's got like the crazy look that I just don't think is gonna transfer over to a Muppet, you know? Yeah.
You know what my answer was? The one that me and my partner both came to, and we're like, yeah, we've won. That's it. The original Alien. And only the alien is still the alien. It's just everyone else, the Muppet. Ripley, the cat, everybody, the android, everybody.
No, but
everybody's a Muppet.
You know, if everyone else was a Muppet but the android, look at how funny that would be. Oh, that would like be to great. Set him apart. Like, yeah. He's an android and he gets to be the only real human in it.
That would be pretty funny as well. Not as funny as the alien, because I just imagine like people, you know that the meme of the Muppet running, the GIF, the Muppet running. I'm just like imagining that, but an actual like 8-foot alien chasing them. Like...
All right, I'm gonna get us back on track here. I want to talk briefly about holiday traditions. It's actually sorry. Look, this is a bit of a relaxed show for this episode for sure. But coming up, I mentioned that moving into next year, lots of stuff going on. I want to kind of close out some projects for some stuff that's coming out. I want to have room on my hobby bench for some other things. And painting the Death Company have a different paint scheme than the rest of the chest eagle on there and the shoulder pad, typically done in white, or like I've seen them done in bone colors, but dealer's choice, whatever you want. And with I kind of constantly look for ways to make painting white easier, because you think it's just take it out of the pot, put it on the model and go, but it's difficult to get depth when you do that. And so I've looked at it from painting, I guess the way I would describe it would be a cool or a warm white. Is that, and look, I don't even know if I'm describing this, I'm not a painter, prefaces, I'm not a painter,
but so maybe explain the difference between those two things, because
Yes. So cool being a darker, you've got a lot of maybe black or grays as the shade into it. And then a warmer being maybe you've got a light gray or even a blue as the shade and the recesses in the white. Tanya disagrees. I don't know if she disagrees or doesn't like the choice of a warm white.
I disagree. Well, so I actually think that with white, well, with any color, the warmth or the cool is going to come from what the kind of undercurrent is. It's generally considered that blue is cool and yellow is going to be warm, right? So when you consider that a white that has a base of a blue or a blue-gray or black blue or something like that is going to be like a cool white, and then a warm white would be something that's like yellow under
you're exactly correct. I'm going to back it up and then say we're talking about the cool or the coolest white.
the coolest white.
And for like the Death Company, I've chosen to shade it with a dark a gray or a black, and Basilicum Gray has kind of come through like a champ with this. It's a contrast paint, so it does what contrast does, and when you thin it out a little bit, it really does just hug right into those recesses without coating the flat surfaces like a Nolan oil would do. And it has gotten to the point to where like this, just I painted the Eagle Celestra Gray, which is it's a really opaque super light gray, and then shaded it with a really thin down basilicanum, and it looks like it's fully painted right now. Like no talent, like no skill, no nothing. Painted by numbers. I mean, I'm talking about like 50-50 water to contrast thin, and it just did it. Now I'm going to go back with on the tips, and it really make it pop out. But you could stop there. And it would be basically done. And so that kind of talent in a bottle I wanted to pass on if anyone's trying to, close out some projects. And that was one of the maybe the sections that you were curious about doing. Doesn't have to be on Death Company, of course, but to shade something white, 50-50 mix, water to basilicanum gray, gets you about 90% there.
I also, I'm just trying to like remember from looking at the bottle, I feel like it's a neutral. So you could use it if you wanted to create a more warm or cool white.
The basilicanum gray?
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it. I have no expertise in that type of like color discussion, other than what I look at. I got eyeballs. That's where the expertise comes. But I wanted to highlight that there are a couple different ways you could do it. And if you were going for that, with a gray, you want to go for a gray shadow, Basilicanum Gray basically came right out of the bottle and just did it. And so I've did that with the, I've shaded it with blue before, like some of, like on Dante's Wings and that kind of stuff. I've done shoulder pad wings. I've done it with a blue, and I think I did with Sanguinar also. But for this, you know, a model that's supposed to look dark and broody, I wanted to go with the gray, and this just works. Like if you have not messed with Basilicanum Gray because you think it's too close to Nolan Oil or whatever, it functions similarly or can, but I think it does a better job of shading these lighter colors. I want to pass that tip. And I hope you get done these in, I got 5 days. Nice. Had to check the watch. So that's that. Coming up next year, I'm going to be doing Warhammer-related things. People are getting ready for the LVO. That's probably the next big event that folks, this is going to close out the ITC season. The ITC is the international tournament circuit, and people compete for best in factions and then best in the overall of all the tournament players that have ever played this year. And a lot of points up for grabs at the Las Vegas Open, which has been historically the end of the ITC season.
Yeah, historically the end, and historically the biggest singles event in the world, usually pushing close to 1,000 players. And I think it's always been a race between the LVO and the LGT, the London Grand Tournament, for who's going to be the biggest event in the world, like have the most people attend. So I'm really, really keen to see what happens this year. In many years gone by, you could almost call who was going to win and with what in like the month or 2 months before, because especially going into let's say the end of 8th edition, when it was literally only pretty much Space Marines could win in that meta, but it was just like the discussion and debate was around which build was it? Mm-hmm. Was it the Raven Wing? Was it the Iron Hands? What XYZ, blah, blah, blah. This year, geez, you can pull up a dartboard. I don't know that anybody knows definitively. I don't know if anybody can say definitively, especially what just happened in the last biggest event in the world that was truly international at the World Championships in Atlanta. I don't know anybody could say definitively 100% this is going to win and this person. Whereas in years gone by, you've been like, this player is probably the best player in the world this year. They're playing the best faction in the world this year. That player's got a good show.
If they were going to the LVO, you would know that they're going to place high enough to where they'll grab the slots.
Correct. And so this year, it's the most open I've ever seen the LVO. And so I'm really, really excited to see what happens at the meta there when, you know, hopefully 4 figures worth of players get together and we just see what is produced. What is surprising, and for the first time in the ITC, the top 10 is not dominated by the United States. The top 10 is dominated by Europe. It's dominated by the UK in particular. The entire top five are from the United Kingdom, which is wild.
And a mix of factions too, right? I mean, it's like of their completely preferred.
Yeah. Completely different. You have a Chaos Space Marine specialist, a Tau specialist, you have an Astro Militarum specialist, and you have a GSC, and then a little bit of everything else specialist. Hive Mind specialist. Of 4 of the top 5, I just literally just reeled off. And so completely different play styles, completely different things they're probably bringing to the dance. And just that on face value. Because last time someone from the United States didn't win the LVO and the ITC was the very first one. The very first LVO was the last time anybody not from the United States. And funny enough, that gentleman was from the United Kingdom also. So we will see what happens there.
It's going to be a battle. As I know, people are hastily planning for what they can take, how to get ready for that. It's hard to put your finger on exactly what to expect because of everything we've highlighted so far. That makes it even more exciting. So if you're curious about that kind of thing, tune in.
Games Workshop made a meal of it also, because they're just like, detachment, spank, grommets, wow. Just like Oprah. You know, with the bees, detachments. Everybody.
I love it because you know, look, there was a time, you know, we kind of looked forward to that daily release, you know, leading up almost like a, you know, an advent calendar type thing leading up to the holiday, and this was so cool. Like anytime we can get more ways to play with the models, I think is awesome. Speaking about collections, you know, having a vast collection, if you can get a viable way to play with models you don't often use, that is that's a nice gift.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, well, that's our show. It has been a pleasure talking about all the various sundry things that we hit this week.
Ooh, good word use.
But that is that's awesome going into the, you know, rounding out this year. We more shows coming, of course. If you have not already, like, share, subscribe to the channel. Please hit those buttons. There are ways to interact with the show that help tell the algorithm that you want to come back. And we want to be here when you do. We want other folks to find us as well. This year has been amazing with y'all talking about these things on the cast, and I appreciate y'all doing it, taking time out of y'all's day and year, and each and every week we do this. We get together, and it's not just the 45 minutes or an hour of the show. We are like it's you know, a multi-hour commitment every week, and I truly appreciate y'all from the bottom of my heart.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks for letting me be a part of this. It's the highlight of my week.
Y'all are amazing.
Always a joy.
Have a happy new year. We'll talk shortly after the new year. Hope you all had great holidays. You know, from the bottom of my heart, everyone listening, same to y'all as well. Hope you're having some peaceful times. Get to chill and do things that y'all want to do during this period. We will see y'all next year, everybody. Have a good night.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
Our craft worlds are sentient beings. These hosts are not. Better luck next time, monkeys!